We have a new president. We've got two ongoing wars, and we've got a major shift in progress that involved both these conflicts. Of course, we've got substantial troop reductions in Iraq, although there will be 50,000 troops remaining there through 2011. And we've got a shift of 17,000 troops into Afghanistan. Neither of these actions are going to require any kind of authorization to use force. Obama is relying on actions taken by Congress before he was even in the U.S. Senate, let alone in the White House.
Right.
We've had the post 9/11 authorization to use force against Al Qaeda and its allies, which happened a week after the 9/11 attacks, and we had the sort of infamous October 2002. Vote by Congress following an intelligence report on the Iraq weapons of mass destruction issue.
Right.
The 9/11 vote happened without a specific intelligence report in hand. The October 2002 Iraq vote came after the intelligence community coughed up a 90-page classified national intelligence estimate that it had produced in a big hurry at the request of Congress. The Bush administration wasn't even going to provide one. And so the point I'm making is that it seems to me, regardless of the constitutional issues in play now, I mean, I think most constitutional experts would agree that no further congressional action is needed on either the Iraq or Afghanistan case, even though I think in Afghanistan we've got a much longer war than anybody anticipated back in 2001. Even so, the point I'm making is that I think we need a new set of sort of a rules of the road for going to war that involves a requirement that the intelligence community produce its best all-source community-wide analysis of a major military commitment prior to a congressional vote authorizing the use of force. And a tradition, if not a requirement, that all members of Congress be required to read the report.
How are you going to watch and see that all the lawmakers read the report?
Well, you certainly couldn't pass a law, because you can't pass a law that requires members to do any particular thing or read any particular report. They're, you know, independently, freely elected lawmakers, and they pretty much do what they want, other than, you know, obeying the basic laws of the land. But it, I think, would be a relatively easy matter to establish a tradition which could be enforceable by peer pressure and some public scrutiny that, first of all, once you have the best that the intelligence community can produce, and it's understood that there, you know, these are, you know, gazing into the future, and there's going to be mistakes in these things, and they're not perfect documents. But once you have the best the community can produce, that a public schedule could be published, where each member would be allotted a certain block of time to go up to the secure room in the U.S. Capitol and read the document or documents, and sign a sign-in sheet saying that he or she had done so. And you know, a member could fail to do so or decide not to do so. But it would at least be public knowledge that the member had made that decision,
right.
And the member could then face whatever consequences might flow from that.
Well, and there's even been a lot of, and the intelligence communities now make their intelligence estimate available, at least in a somewhat sanitized version, available in some kind of public forum. Maybe they could make that document even public in some kind of way that at least gets, you know, and that's, I think, a lot of people's frustration with what happened with Iraq was there was all these documents that people kept saying, okay, we can't tell you about that.
Right.
And so it became difficult to have a public debate about information that we don't have.
Well, yes, that's right. And you know, obviously the intelligence community was saying it was protecting sources and methods, and we really didn't even get a sanitized version, which was about 5 to 10% of
right.
the national intelligence estimate on Iraq, until July of 2003, by which time we were already deeply embedded in that war. But what we had in the case of Iraq was this very odd situation where you had an intelligence estimate that, of course, now we know was deeply flawed because it made all sorts of conclusions about weapons that Iraq turns out not to have had. But we also know from reporting, my own reporting and reporting by colleagues in the media, that hardly anyone in Congress even read that flawed document.
Yeah.
And it's to too bad, because although the document had its flaws, major flaws, it also had lots of minority opinions and footnotes which raised interesting questions that might have made the debate a little bit more interesting and a little bit less automatic prior to going to war. It probably wouldn't have prevented the decision to go to war, but it would have at least made the debate a little bit more interesting. We had, after the fact, we had Democrats in Congress crying foul and demanding investigations and launching investigations into the gap between what the Bush administration said about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction and what the intelligence community had said about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction. Perfectly legitimate line of inquiry, but it's one they could have made before we made the decision to go to war, had they only read the document and noticed that there was a delta between what the White House was saying and what the intelligence community was saying.